So we have several presentations this morning, so I'd like to convene the Finance Committee, and we don't have a quorum present yet, so we'll withhold action on the minutes until we do have a quorum present. But we are going to be continuing this morning with the overviews by the fiscal staff and then some comments from the division chairs about what they see as some of the issues that will be coming before their divisions this legislative session. And so we'll be continuing with presentations by Mr. Soderberg, the fiscal analyst for, in this case today, the Energy Policy and Finance Division. So that's your second account. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm going to be working off of this handout that should be in your packet. The Energy Finance and Policy Division, in addition to its responsibilities on the policy side, has two accounts that they're responsible for on the budget side. And that is the Department of Commerce and the Public Utilities Commission. Begin with, Mr. Chairman, page 2 and 3 of your handout includes both a graph, a pie chart of the accounts, as well as the dollar amount of these two divisions in total. If you look at those, you'll see that this division base going into this biennium for the next 2 years has about a $317.5 million base funding level.
Excuse me, Mr. Soderberg, Representative Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. May I ask him a question?
Sure.
Mr. Soderberg, can you tell me something about the Petroleum Release Fund? Where is those? Is that just about finished, and are there still monies coming in out of dedicated funds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, the Petroleum Release Fund was extended 5 years last session, so I think it goes out to 2012. So it will continue until 2012. As you can see on this chart, Commerce is a major, receives major funding for the, from the Petroleum Release Fund. In addition to Commerce, two other agencies in state government receive funding from that. The Department of Employment and Economic Development receives about $6.2 million per year for their contaminated site cleanup program, and the PCA also receives funding. I'm not sure how much they receive.
Representative, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Soderberg, the funds come from gasoline tax or dedicated tax, don't they?
Yeah.
Is there a cap on that, so much per year?
Mr. Chairman, really what it is a blink on and blink off. What happens is if the fund goes below $4 million, then it goes on. It's a 2 cents per gallon, and it's usually on about 4 months of the year. According to the department, that's typically about this time of the year. It runs from about the first of the year, 4 months out, so April, May, or April through April, about 14. So it's out about 4 months a year.
Thank you.
Looking at the, one of the, probably the most significant things that you see in looking at the chart is the amount of federal funds in this particular division. Just over 60 cents on every dollar is federal funds. That's largely owing to the LIHEAP program, the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program. That is about $85 million a year. All of the federal funds are in the Department of Commerce. PUC receives no federal funds. The other significant dollar amounts that are driving that federal number is weatherization is about $10 million a year, and then there's about $1.2 in miscellaneous energy funds from the federal government. The other thing I think of note here is that the general fund is 15 cents on the dollar for these accounts. It's probably one of the smaller accounts that have the smallest of the general fund of all the accounts that you'll probably see coming in front of you. Special revenue fund is a relatively large amount of money in these accounts. That's partly owing to two telephone assistance programs, or the Telecommunication Access Minnesota program and the Telephone Assistance Program. The Telephone Access Minnesota
program is in commerce, a telephone assistance program for PWC. Other major things are the auto theft program is a special revenue program that was transferred over to commerce from the public safety a couple years ago. We have an insurance fraud special revenue account in commerce, which is about $1.7 million a year. And also the insurance examination revolving fund is another major account in the special revenue fund, and that's about $3 million a year. So
the other significant one is the other one we just talked about, the petroleum paint relief fund,
so I won't get into that. But that tells you just kind of how the dollars flow. The general fund is about $47.5 million in the base for these accounts. Going on, Mr. Chairman, the individual agencies themselves are showing on the next chart, and you can see how the funds flow through those agencies. As you can see in commerce, about $39.2 million is the base funding for the biennium going forward. And the other significant thing is the PUC is about $2 out of every $3 is out of the general fund.
Representative,
Mr. Soderbergh, is the increase of the governor's recommendations generally related to technology, and is it one-time money?
I will get into that in
just
a moment.
Okay.
Just a moment, Mr. Chair.
This
is just the base funding from the November forecast I'm talking about, or showing on this chart, and we'll get into the governor's recommendations on the next chart, in fact.
Okay. So that's where you want us to turn next?
Yep.
Okay.
And you'll see there is just a summary of the governor's general fund recommendations. As you can see, overall, the recommendations are about a 35% increase for these two accounts. Commerce is about 14.6 off a base, about $39 million. The PUC is about $2.2 million off a base of just over $8 million. And you can see the dollar amounts as well as the percentage increases. Now, I do want to caution people, and I think this is probably true for many accounts, and this account is in particular, is that these numbers are largely being driven by one item in the general fund of the governor's recommendations. This next chart gives you just kind of an overview of the governor's recommendation by year, by department, and it also shows the revenue recommendations of the governor. And I don't want to get a lot into this, but if you look down at the fourth item under commerce, you'll see a one-time $12 million appropriation being recommended by the governor for the E85 Everywhere Initiative. So when you looked at the last chart, you saw significant increases. Recognize that some of those are just for this biennium. Beyond the ongoing increases for commerce in particular are far less in the out bienniums than they are in the 08-09 biennium. So I just want to caution everyone that these kinds of things do exist, and I'm sure it's not only true for the accounts in this division, but in several other divisions where one-time items are being recommended.
Now, the other thing to recognize is that both in the case of commerce and the PUC is that a lot of the increased recommendations for the general fund are recovered, either through assessments on the part of commerce in the PUC, it's more assessments on the part of the PUC, they quarterly assess the utilities under the regulation for the operations of the PUC. In commerce, it's a lot of it is through recovery, although there are a couple of initiatives in here that would not fall into those two categories. But that kind of gives you an idea of what the governor's recommending. Like I said, I don't want to get into the specifics too much, but it gives you an idea of how the dollars flow, both through the respective agencies as well as the fiscal years.
And
Mr. Over.
Just a quick moment. We do have a quorum present, so I think I'll just officially convene the meeting at this point. For those that arrived a few minutes late, we started with the testimony in anticipation of having a quorum in a few minutes, and we're now at that point. So, Representative Seifert, do you want to move approval of the minutes?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Recognized?
So moved.
So the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. You had a question as well.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Soderberg, you said that you had the auto theft prevention program in your accounts for this division. One question I had when I first started here, that was a fairly new program. The House had voted to get rid of it, I think, twice. And it was funded through a surcharge on auto insurance, if I remember correctly. Was it 50 cents a year?
50 cents every 6 months.
Okay, so $1 a year. Was that rated at one time as some of that money not being used for auto theft prevention, but rather now supplementing the general fund? And if so, how much is going to the general fund out of that surcharge where people think it's going for auto theft prevention when essentially it's probably being dumped in the general fund?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert, I think I'm going to yield to Gary Carter. Was that in their tenure when it was over in public safety? Whatever happened, happened. I'll let him speak.
Okay.
Mr. Carter, welcome.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, yes, it was rated at one time. I think it takes in about $3.3 million a year. Mr. Soderberg said it's 50 cents every 6 months on every automobile. And it was rated completely, I think, in the 03 session. And right now, like I said, we're taking $1.3 million, leaving them with about $2 million a year to spend on auto theft programs.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick follow-up. Mr. Carger, I had heard from some folks in the insurance business that collecting this is, you know, not cheap either per se, putting it on the statement and going through the machinations of collection and turning it around and sending it in. Do we have an idea of what it would cost to collect something like this, or is it better to ask the people who are doing the work and sending it in and so forth? Because I'm wondering if we're taking $1.3 million of it, would it make sense just to cut it from 50 cents to a quarter and not over-collect, being that we're trying to get away from kabuki math and actually be honest with how much things cost and how much we're bringing in?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think you would have to ask the agency that. Right now, I think it's public safety is still doing the bookkeeping, although that will change as of July, and then the Department of Commerce will take over completely the auto theft program. But if you would like, we could ask public safety to see maybe if they could come up with a cost on that.
Are you making a request, then, Representative?
Mr. Chair, if I could, I think it would be helpful for us, just for honesty and budgeting, to know some of these things. So it is getting moved from, is that the administration's moving it from public safety to commerce, or we're doing that, or both of us are doing it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, it was recommended in the governor's budget last year, or the 05 budget, that they would move from public safety to the Department of Commerce.
And there hasn't been any suggestion to just, Mr. Chair, do away with this fee and just make people go to the general fund like everybody else has to justify what they're doing?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert. He asks your point.
Having been around the whole process where the money was taken from the Auto Theft Prevention Board over the years, it really is a good program, Representative Seifert, and it's unfortunate money has been siphoned off in the past and gone to the general fund. It provides county attorneys in all of our jurisdictions with important programs to reduce auto theft in our counties. They use it for stings, they use it for education programs, and they really have, when the program has run effectively, you can measure the reduction in auto theft. So I would argue that, and you can talk to Mr. Johnson from the insurance industry, they like the program. In fact, I have a bill that, would actually well, I won't get into the bill, but I wanted to take some of the money that was siphoned off and put and had been put in the general fund and bring it back to the Auto Theft Prevention Board. He supports that. So let's not, I guess I would suggest is let's not, you know, kill a good idea. And I understand exactly what you're saying, but the program is good.
I might just comment, when I was on what used to be known as the Financial Institutions and Insurance Committee, if I recall correctly, they came in and testified in support of that fee. Representative Rucavina?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to ask Representative Seifert if he wants to talk about honesty and budgeting, if maybe we shouldn't be the only state in the union that counts inflation on the revenue side and doesn't count it on the spending side in order to hide the real cost of what's going on around here. But I do have to add, you know, Representative Seifert, if you want to worry about that dollar we're paying a year, maybe you should worry about the $1,900 our folks in nursing homes, my mother, who happens to be one of them, are paying into the general fund when we put that fee on them. And as far as your statement is concerned about you have to go to the general fund like everybody else, Representative Seifert, you know better than that. You put $1 billion worth of fees on people when you were in charge, and you fully funded the entire criminal justice system now with fees to the point that the cops got to make an arrest to make a car payment, and the judge got to sentence somebody to make a house payment. So don't talk about going to the general fund like everything else, because it's absolutely not true. As cigarette fee is a case in point that I think you also supported, but I could be wrong. Sometimes you're on my side on those issues. You voted for it. Okay.
No, to get rid of it.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, you know, that's, you know, it's like buy a pack of cigarettes to fund the science class. Tell the kids over 18 to go smoke, you know. Come on.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up to that.
Maybe just a brief comment then, and then sure. I think we should get back on the agenda.
Mr. Chair, I couldn't agree with Representative Rucavina more. I am chief authoring a bill to repeal the entire granny tax that was put on in 03, and I look forward to your co-authorship and voting for it on the House floor when we have it as a floor amendment on the Human Services Bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, just to that point, Representative Seifert, you're not going to cut everything and not raise the money to spend it. So you come up with a good progressive tax to replace that money, and I'll be there carrying your banner.
Representative Soderberg, were you done with your overview?
You've been elevated. I just have one more quick one, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
It's just that I just wanted to indicate to the committee and for information that the governor does also have a couple of significant initiatives as it relates to the non-general fund and the special revenue fund. He's recommending $7.5 million a year for two initiatives. These would be funded by a transfer from the XL Renewable Development Fund to the Department of Commerce. With that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you.
Just one quick question. Mr. Soderberg, on the Public Utilities Commission, the governor is recommending some additional appropriations, and you said they're funded by additional fees on the utilities. But do those get put into the general fund and then we appropriate them out? Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I should make a clarification as well on that question. If you look at the public utilities, but you're right, Representative Silver, yes, these are put into the general fund, and then we appropriate the dollars directly out of the general fund. But if you look at the governor's recommendation, one of them is for the reliability administrator staff. That is a current program that was set to expire at the end of this year. It's currently funded up to $1 million a year to be assessed to the utilities for the reliability administrator function. And what the governor is recommending is that that be continued, and that instead of it being a special revenue fund appropriation, that it be a general fund appropriation. So.
Mr. Chair, let me just pick that one out. It's a general fund appropriation. However, it's a fee that went back to the utilities to fund it?
There will be an assessment against the utilities.
Okay. Representative Westrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speaking of the RDF funds, what is going to be left after what's been taken out previous and what's being proposed? Is there any amount left?
Mr. Sutterberg. Mr. Chairman, Representative, at this point, I think there might be a over encumbrance if all this happens. Given what the board is anticipating doing, as you are probably aware, they are going to be doing a round, the third round of grant requests or request for proposals here at the end of this month. And they also have kind of reserved $5 million for what they're hoping to be a more of a lifetime type approach, a revolving loan rather than just all grants and everything like that. And with the governor's recommendation and with what their plans are, something's going to have to give. I don't think there's going to be enough to do it all at the same time. There just isn't enough cash flow into the account. Now realize that's on an encumbrance basis. I can't say that there wouldn't be enough on a cash flow basis because obviously not all the money goes out the door on day one of the grant process. But I think that it needs to be looked at by the legislature whether all these things can happen at one time. Something may have to give.
Follow up. The RDF was used to pay for some of the I forget if it's some wind payments, I believe, that the state used to help balance the budget. Was that ever designated to go back to the general fund in about 2009, or did that not? There was discussion of only having that be a temporary transfer to the state general fund to pay for some wind incentive payments. Is that permanent, or is that did that only go till 2009 and then it'll transfer back? You recall offhand?
Soderbergh.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrum, that is permanent. There was some discussion. I know it would make it 4 years to get through the budget cycle when it was done. I think it was 2005, but that never was enacted.
All right.
So it is permanent.
And as I mentioned in previous meetings and again this morning, we'd be asking each of the division chairs to make a brief comment about what they saw as emerging issues for their divisions. Representative Philby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of what we need to talk about has already been covered, especially the point that Representative Westrum just raised. That's one of the things that certainly we have to give some consideration to when we look at the budget. I think in general there isn't a great deal of controversy about what the governor is proposing in the budget, provided that the funding can be worked out. One of the things that I really think needs a lot of attention in this budget is that there are dollars proposed for research and development. I think that the need that we have for the development of energy sources of every kind is actually greater than is reflected in this budget. I should warn you that we have 40 bills that have been referred to the committee. At least 20 of those would have some funding proposal. Some of them are explicit, some are as yet undefined. But that's going to be a focus of the committee, is to try to assess what projects do have merit, what kind of funding would be required, and then we need to see if we can find the money to fund what the committee deems necessary or desirable. And, Mr. Chair, I do want to say that in that regard, there are many other states that are devoting many more resources to development of renewable fuels and renewable energy sources than this budget reflects, and I think that it's something that we need to look at very carefully as we go forward.
Thank you. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilke, I don't know what your planning on doing in your committee, but like the petroleum tank relief cleanup fund. Is that, refresh my memory, either you or Mr. Soderberg, when that, is that being funded all the time with that surcharge, or does it get to a certain level and, it, and the surcharge kicks in again? And if so, then I see you nodding your head. Because I'm thinking, you know, Representative Hilty, maybe the oil industry should help and the citizens who purchase oil should help, you know, fund renewable energy. And since a lot of these special funds, like the Workers' Comp Fund and the unemployment funds were depleted when we weren't in control, maybe we can use some of that, those reserves, to find money for things like that that I know you'd like to do. And I'm also curious, what money is in the special revenue fund? I mean, Mr. Soderberg, and then finally, Mr. Chair, maybe this question to you, Mr. Chair, is I believe, like, I have the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals in my committee, but I don't have their money. So, did that money follow where the place, maybe Mr. Marks or somebody could also answer that. But, you know, there's money all over the place that is supposed to be with certain committees that sometimes isn't. So, did I steal a little money too at the same time?
I'll have to defer to Mr. Marks as to where that money is, if you recall offhand, Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I think you may be referring to the Workers' Compensation Fund, which I believe funds programs in several committees. So the fund is in one place. There are it funds Workers' Compensation Court. I believe it funds some programs in state government finance and some in probably several other committees as well. So it's
I guess, Mr. Chair, then, how does that work? If I have a Workers' Comp Court of Appeals in my committee, but I don't have the money that funds them, can I still steal the money then from Representative Hilton?
Mr. Chair, perhaps it will become necessary to set targets for that fund if that becomes an issue. But
Mr. Chair, do you have any suggestions on that?
This is brand new to me, so I...
but to the
you know,
special revenue...
How that fund,
Mr. Chair, I might have a suggestion about that.
But if it's about to be dispersed, there's probably about 10 or 12 people here that would have some ideas.
To the special revenue fund.
Though. Yeah, that, Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I spoke to this a little bit. The big items in the special revenue fund in these accounts are two telephone or telecommunication assistance programs, that being the Telecommunications Access Minnesota program, which is largely the relay system for the hearing impaired and the like. There's a telephone assistance program, which is a program to help low-income seniors and disabled pay for their telephone bills. Those are two major ones. Another one is the weights and measure account. At one time, that was funded out of the general It's by, and it now it's out of the special, it became a special revenue fund at the request of the industry, and that's paid by petroleum inspections. They do a lot of the weights and measures stuff at the pumps and the like. Another one is the insurance examination revolving fund. That's to the tune of about $3 million each year. And that is a revolving fund that, because insurance companies are often outside the state, there's a revolving fund to pay for the examinations, to pay for the people going out and doing the examinations. The interesting thing about that account is that it, I'm not aware of many other accounts, but at the end of the year, anything over $25,000 in that account transfers to the general fund.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Corinne Zuris, who is the fiscal analyst for transportation policy and the finance division of the capital investment division as well. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Corinne Zewers, and I will be talking about both the Capital Investment Finance Division and the Transportation Finance Division today. And I'd like to start out with the Capital Investment Finance Division. And you should have all of these materials in your packet. The capital investment accounts include capital projects, bonding, and debt service. And I'll be going over the debt management policy as well as the forecast for capital budgets, what types of projects are eligible for bonding, and then getting into some of the specific numbers as well. The executive debt management policy was established in 1979, and there are three main goals of this policy. The first is to maintain a AAA bond rating. The second is to minimize the state's borrowing costs, and the third is to stay within a prudent set debt limit. There are two main measures for managing the debt. The first is to utilize a 3% general fund to debt service ratio, and this means that the debt service cannot be greater than 3% of non-dedicated general fund revenues. There is also a 2.5% debt to personal income ratio, which is also used as a measure. The other thing that we do is to promote the rapid repayment of debt. What this means is that Minnesota tries to retire 40% of its debt within 5 years, 70% of its debt within 10 years, and 100% of its debt within 20 years. The current forecast for capital budgets based on the November 2006 forecast is that $645 million, that the budget will be $645 million for even-numbered legislative sessions and $135 million for odd-numbered legislative sessions. Based on these assumptions and the 3% debt management guideline that I just mentioned, the maximum debt capacity is $975 million for even number years and $135 million for odd number years. And the types of projects that are eligible for bond financing include the projects must be publicly owned, the project must be capital expenditure, the project must be for a public purpose, and lastly, the project's purpose must be clearly outlined in law. And there are also a few other constitutional provisions that allow for bonds to be issued for projects such as to promote forestation and to prevent and abate forest fires, to construct, improve, and operate airports and other navigational facilities. There are also provisions around agricultural resources and railroads as well.
Representative Holbert.
Just one quick question, if I may. In your second paragraph, since we have the total capacity in the second year of $975 million and the $135 million, do you know that if we increase the bonding authority for the first year of the biennium, what that does dollar for dollar on the second year of the biennium?
Ms. Zoris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I'm not sure on the dollar-for-dollar amount. If we decrease how much we would spend in the first part of the biennium, it may allow for the capacity to spend more in the second.
But, Mr. Chairman, I think what it is, it's not a dollar-for-dollar amount. I think it's... But I don't know that for sure, and I will try to find that from finance.
If you, Mr. Chair and Representative Goldberg, if you'd like, I can get that for you.
Okay, Representative Kahn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Zellers, a couple of questions. One, when we're looking at the debt management policy, Is that 3% supposed to consider the authorized debt, or is it the debt that's outstanding? Let me make the point, the specific reason I want to apply this. When we authorize bonds for something, we usually don't sell all of the bonds at one point. We usually, you know, do it over a period of time. And if we know we're going to do that, are we looking at the debt sold or the debt authorized?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, the 3% the 3% ratio is of general fund revenues for non-dedicated sources.
Right. Representative Stolberg is saying it's authorized, but I didn't But one of the things that we've had in several reports is that the 3% is kind of a meaningless number. But I want to, since it's a meaningless number, I kind of want to see what it's applied to as a meaningless number. And the issue, and Representative Solberg, if you say it's the authorized debt, then it's even more meaningless, because the point is we could authorize debt for something and that authorized debt could hang around for some very long period of years before we ever sell the bonds. And it would seem to me that the bonds outstanding ought to be the thing that's important.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think that the 3% is a guideline, and it's a guideline that's kind of easily understood. Probably the 2.5% debt ratio is a better guideline as far as the bonding houses are concerned, because that gives us our capacity to pay.
Yeah.
But the 3% is a quick and easy one for us to follow. But it is, I think, authorization, because once you authorize something, then you are giving the authority to the governor and the administration to sell the bonds. And we don't know when they're going to sell them. They may sell all of them in the first year. We don't know that. So that's why I think that 3% is the authorization.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and maybe you told us that, did you tell us what the numbers would be if we used the 2.5% debt to personal income ratio?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, the 2.5% debt to personal income ratio, that's another measure, and I don't have those numbers with me today, but I can get them for you.
Thanks. Could you get them for us?
Mm-hmm.
Then the other question I have is the kinds of projects that are eligible for bond financing, and I'm looking at a couple of things which are done in different ways and don't totally make sense. One of the things I think that people are looking at is if we're going to do some major technology expansion, should that be eligible for bond financing? And I think we've had them not eligible on the state level, but they are eligible for local units of government. School districts, for example, do it. So I don't think the Constitution said that computer upgrades were uneligible or ineligible for bond financing. So I'm kind of interested in how we would get that as something, because it's something which you would do over a long period of time. Is it, is it national bond council, local bond council, whatever? But who said that we can't do technology, and why do the school districts do it? I'm sorry, you're obviously some sort of asking me. You're just sitting there.
Mr. Chair,
I want to respond to
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Marks can answer that.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't have a definitive answer either. I think that is the determination that the Department of Finance tells us is what bond council says. I think the distinction is that technology is okay in a new building as part of the building construction. It's not, if it's updating technology, or updating technology in an existing building, I think the determination is usually that, no, we can't sell bonds for it.
Well, that's my next question, and I don't know if, maybe some of the things is to look, I don't know if our bond council means our state, or if it means a national scene, or so forth. But the other thing is, and I'm sorry, these things just don't make a lot of sense to me. The other, and that's the one that you said for technology. The example is that furniture. Is that it's okay to bond for the furnishings of a new building, but it's not okay to bond for the updated furnishings in an existing building. And again, I could accept either argument. I just can't accept the difference for the new building and the ongoing building. And that's why I think I'm more concerned about technology than I am for the furniture.
We would raise that question with the Education Division of Appropriations even years ago, and what we would call the Higher Ed Division today. We were always told bond council separated those out because we would be searching for ways to try to provide the funds. And bond council, I guess we never really, that I recall, separated local from national, but
I would.
It may have been just the same response in either case.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, I would just say that bond counsel doesn't really sound like the hand of God coming from above. I think it does. I think the answer is to find out what that is. Is it a national standard? Is it a standard that all states go by? Are there, I can't believe from what I know of the investment field that that's a unified position. I mean, maybe it is. I just don't know.
But I think just finding out, and
maybe is it possible to ask why new buildings and not existing buildings?
Maybe Ms. Lewis or the Department of Finance. It was usually the testimony I was referring to. Generally came from the Department of Finance when we would ask those questions. But maybe if you could find out and get back to Representative Kahn and the others in the committee that may be interested. Just assume the whole committee, if you would. Representative Swigum is next.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Sewers, a question for you, if I could, on the projects for the eligibility for bond financing. Let me first say to Representative Kahn, I think the 3% debt guideline is far from meaningless. It certainly is time honored, and I think for good reason. For good reason.
I've never heard you say that anything time honored would be meaningful.
I'll have
Representative Swigum, why don't you continue?
Give me a couple hours to think about it. But Ms. Ewers, to a question to you, when you talk about the projects eligible for bond financing and the criteria you list their specific criteria, do we not also have some specific criteria relating to the statewide or regional significance of a project? Is that not in law someplace?
Mr. Chair, maybe Bill knows.
Ms. Zuers, I think Ms. Novak wanted to respond to that one. Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Swigum and members, the criteria that Ms. Zuers has listed are constitutional criteria. The one that you've mentioned, the regional significance or statewide significance, is a statutory criteria for local projects.
Okay. I thought we had passed something in 99 or 2000 regarding a statewide significance or at least regional significance of a project before it would qualify for state debt. But that's statutory as opposed to constitutional. Thank you.
Representative Kahn on that point?
No.
Oh, okay. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the point that Representative Kahn raised on the debt for computers and software, that has been an ongoing concern in the Tax Committee. In fact, we have had public finance provisions to allow local units of government. And I know they're back this year with an extension. We've sunsetted it. And I think the argument really was that the items that people would like to bond for depreciate to zero in about 5 to 7 years. So that's the complication when you're looking at any new software or computer system. It's gone so fast that I think that's where bond counsel has an issue with these pieces, and so we will be debating that again in taxes just this year for local units of government. But I do have a question, Mr. Chair, and that is maybe for Mr. Marks. I noticed that for the executive debt management policy, it says the three main goals are to maintain or regain Minnesota's AAA or the rest of the bond rating sentence here. Where are we at? I remember we had a lot of controversy about this about 4 years ago. And, Mr. Marks, can you tell me what the bond rating for the state is right now, and does Moody's and Standard & Poor's and Fitch's all rate us the same way, or are they in disagreement?
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lincheski, we have the highest rating, the AAA, from two of the three. I'm trying to remember if it's Moody's or Standard & Poor's where we have the second highest rating, which
Moody's.
I
believe. Moody's. Moody's.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Just so everybody heard that, Representative Houseman, did you?
It was Moody's. That is the second. The top is Standard & Poor's and Fitch.
Representative Lincheski, were you?
That's it.
Okay. We have next Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, a more basic question has been repeated often, that bonding is not considered new money. Anybody care to comment on that? Something I don't know. not considered new money. It's considered debt.
I'm asking the question.
Can anybody explain that to me?
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, where I could think of that concept is that relative to general fund spending, it's the debt service cost that's new money as opposed to the bonding that's new money when we're dealing with general fund costs. But state bond appropriations are also appropriated from the bond account, so it's new money in that sense. It's the cost to the general fund of the debt service that we measure as far as putting targets together for the general fund.
Okay, Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, this is, again, as to the limits. Suppose we were to use a new gas tax or something like that that would go into the transportation fund as a source for bonding. Would that then still have to relate to the general fund, to the 3%? And the other thing, in another way, suppose we would use bonding from either the Environmental Trust Fund or the Game and Fish Fund or something like that. Would they still relate to the 3% of the general fund?
Mr. Marks, would you...
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I don't think so, because they'd be funded from a separate funding source. There may be issues as to the adequacy of the revenue in that fund to cover the bonds, but it's not general fund money going to those, so I would assume I'm not real comfortable with that answer.
All right. Well, Mr. Chairman, it's just a suggestion for members to think about, particularly when we're trying to look at some very large chunks of money for something like the Clean Water Legacy or something like that. If we were to want to advance, for example, water cleanup and water purification by looking at some bonding from the Environmental Trust Fund or from any new legacy fund that might have a different source of a dedicated fund, or in the case of transportation, if I was not pleased with the governor's proposal to bond from the general fund for transportation issues, but if you set up a, if you bonded from, and obviously when a fund is in trouble, you don't want to take further money away from it, but if you put, and I think there was one proposal like this last year at some point, but if you had a new gasoline tax and you used some of the proceeds so that you wouldn't have to worry about how reliable it was for bonding, you could greatly accelerate our capital transportation needs.
Okay, Representative Elston.
Well, probably Representative Leader wants to speak to that, but when we're talking about the gas tax and trunk highway bonding, we are talking about a different type, and Representative Leader can give us some little history about the amount of debt and the downside of using too much of the gas tax for bonding.
Representative Leader, did you want to respond? We also had Representative Earhart's hand up. Maybe it's on the same point, but
thank you, Mr. Chair. In the past, every time we've been in, even in the conference committee, when it came to bonds, trunk highway bonds are considered special revenue and they never affected the general fund bonds. That was a big thing, and I think right now we've got a significant amount of trunk highway bonds. Up to the last 10 years, there were rarely a trunk highway bond issued, but I think that I have the numbers, but I think we got a pretty big obligation that I probably better not quote in the trunk highway bond now. And again, as Representative Kahn pointed out, if it's general obligation bonds and used for trunk highways, that would affect in way it appears, because that used to come up when we had our conference committee. That would be affect the 3%, but the trunk highway bonds don't, again, because they're special revenue.
Yeah, an example, Representative Leader, didn't we deal with bridges at times that were general obligation bonds that would be under the 3%?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Those are general obligation bonds for local bridge improvements, but they're not trunk highway.
So it'd be an example of how that's separated.
That wouldn't affect the general obligation bond. That's correct. There's also a couple other programs, local improvement, and there's a revolving fund that are general obligation bonds, but not trunk highway.
Mr. Chairman, I have a letter circulated among the transportation folks some years ago that established an agreed debt service for the trunk highway fund, not bonding, trunk highway bonding, that was later abandoned when we got to the point where the will to increase the gas tax was not there. So what happened was the 3% that's on the general obligation bonds of the state, the general fund was also not the same amount, but slightly more agreed to among the transportation folks. And when they found they couldn't meet their obligations in that manner, they simply abandoned it. So if anybody would like to see a copy of the letter, I have some for you.
Okay, thank you. I think what we'll do now is ask Representative Hausman to comment, and then we'll be moving, being that we're kind of into the transportation a bit already. Representative Hausman.
And, Mr. Chair, it occurred to me that hearing the questions this morning that Peter Sausen has a great presentation where the overheads, I think, are very understandable without his presentation, and I could give them to the chair if you felt they would be of help to this.
That may be a good idea. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
I think you wanted us to talk just briefly about what we thought our priorities might be. Obviously, our committee is not hasn't...
The priority slash issues
that would be
however you define
before
that,
us. Yeah. And the largest amount in the governor's budget is for the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center. And just by virtue of the size of that one, I would guess that would be among our top two or three. The other items in the governor's bonding recommendations, the DOT exterior, some property acquisition by administration, Oak Park Heights Prison has some issues. The Minnesota Zoo has an issue. City of Stillwater and the Department of Ag Rural Finance Authority loans. Those are in the governor's budget. And again, that the largest amount is for the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center. In addition to those, I would guess there will be two other items that, and I'm assuming because our committee hasn't had the discussions yet, but. In a regular bonding year, there are huge amounts of money requested by the University of Minnesota and MNSCU for new buildings. And so what often happens is that asset preservation line is shorted a bit. And so we have taken a look in our committee at what those needs are and what we didn't fund last year when we cut the HEPR amount. And so I'm guessing that asset preservation for higher education might be one of ours. And then transportation almost always is a major issue. Representative Leader just mentioned local bridges. That is one issue in the bonding bill that I think we try to do some catch-up on that issue. And, of course, that's also where we fund our transit ways. So I would think those would be the biggies. There is one large amount that there is a difference of opinion in the House and the Senate, and that is renovation of the Capitol. And you may be hearing some discussion about that. That item is a $260 million item, and so it's a pretty big price tag, but we're doing some ongoing work about that. I think, of course, in the bonding bill, we do fund some natural resources issues. Some of the water infrastructure issues come before us, economic development, of course, higher education, transportation, corrections. The one other issue, and I, Representative, well, I guess the two committees where this is going through, I'm not sure where this is going to end up, the Biomedical Sciences Research Facilities Authority that the University of Minnesota is seeking, that would be a very major issue, and we'll have to see how the committees who are hearing that are feeling about that and what kind of recommendation they'll make to us.
Okay, thank you.
I should also say, Mr. Chair, that when I give you that debt management presentation, it includes the historical summary from 1983 to 2006. And we always think of a bonding year and a non-bonding year, but if you look at this historic summary, in fact, there's always a bonding bill. It's just a different size. And there are, in most years, some direct appropriations. In the year 1998, there was over $500 million. That was in a year when we were having some surplus, and there was a discussion then about using some of that for one-time needs. that would take some problems off the table if we were able to solve them with one-time appropriations, and that was the largest year since 1983. So just one additional issue.
Okay, and we have two people that want to comment, and then we'll go to Transportation Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question for Representative Hausman. I have for Ms. Zuers. If there are questions, I can hold. If there are questions for Representative Hausman first.
I think we're ready for Ms. Zuers, Representative Leader.
Ms. Zuers, I look at the last page in your handout. It says Trunk Highway, $538 million. That's general obligation bonds, and that's not Trunk Highway bonds? I didn't think the general obligation in Trunk Highways was that high.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, are you looking at the last page of the bonding?
Yes.
Current outstanding general obligation bonds for Trunk Highway are around $538 million.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Leader, I think on that point, Ms. Novak also wanted to comment. Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Leader, Trunk Highway bonds are supported by the Trunk Highway Fund, but they are considered to be general obligation bonds of the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Representative Leader, does that take care?
Yes, thank you,
Mr. Representative Earhart, and then we'll go to transportation. We're hearing from the two transportation voters already. So.
Same person.
Representative Earhart, are you that?
Same person.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Let's go to transportation then.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the transportation materials should also be in your packet. There are three main accounts that the Transportation Finance Division works with. The first is the Department of Transportation, and that includes Aeronautics, Greater Minnesota Transit, State Roads, Local Roads Administration, and Electronic Communications. We also work with the Metropolitan Council and then a portion of the Department of Public Safety. And the other Department of Public Safety accounts are in the Public Safety Finance Division. And first what I'd like to do is to just show this this chart on the allocation of general fund resources for fiscal 2008-2009. And transportation makes up 0.7% of the general fund spending. But most of the funds for transportation come through other accounts, and this is on the next page. The majority of the funds move through the Trunk Highway Fund, that's 63% of them, for appropriations. This is about $1.3 billion. Other major funds include the County State Aid Highway Fund at 23%, and then the Municipal State Aid Street Fund as well. The next page gets into the major dedicated state transportation tax revenue sources. The major revenue sources for transportation flow through the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The major revenue sources include the motor fuels tax, which is at about 20 cents per gallon. The second is the registration fees, also known as cab fees, and these are based on a depreciation schedule and are charged at 1.25% of the base rate. The other major revenue source is the motor vehicle sales tax, which is projected to be at $512.5 million for fiscal year 2007. And the motor vehicle sales tax, 30% of it currently goes to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and the other portions are divided among Greater Minnesota Transit, the General Fund, and Metro Transit. And I'll be going into the constitutional amendment in a little bit. With the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, the majority of the funds go to the Trunk Highway Fund, the County State Aid Highway Fund, and the Municipal State Aid Streets Fund. And there are some other revenues or other resources are also taken off for things like collecting MVEST, the cost for that. And then with the other state government and transfers, there's there are transfers such as one that goes to the Department of Natural Resources for snowmobiles. So with the three main sources, the Trunk Highway Fund, the County State Aid Highway, and the Municipal State Aid Streets, the majority of the fund is split up between those, and that's at a 62% to the Trunk Highway Fund, 29% to the County State Aid Highway Fund, and 9% to the Municipal State Aid Streets. The Trunk Highway Fund, just to provide a little bit more detail on that, that fund also receives federal resources, and it is used for things such as the State Patrol, the Department of Public Safety, state road construction, MnDOT operations, and then also debt service on the Trunk Highway bonds. And just to provide the next page in your handout a little bit more information on the constitutional amendment for the motor vehicle sales tax, at least 40% of the motor vehicle sales tax revenues must be dedicated to transit. So there are a couple of major decision points that will have to be made during this legislative session. The first is the around the 60-40 split. If the legislature would like more money to go towards transit, the 40% could be increased. The other decision point is around the split between Greater Minnesota Transit and the Metro Transit. Currently in the governor's proposal, he proposes a 38% split to Metropolitan Transit and a 2% to Greater Minnesota Transit. And that's up for discussion. And then the last pages of your handout are my spreadsheet. And the numbers in there, the top numbers are the base numbers, and then the numbers underneath the decision items are the governor's proposed decision items for the 2008-2009 biennium.
Members, are there any questions? Representative Hausman.
Not a question, but one other number that we did finally get that might be of interest to committee members, and that is if you add up in a year the amount of state money, federal money, and property taxes spent on roads in Minnesota, that number is $3 billion. Per year.
At least.
If there are, Representative Holder.
Do we have any kind of an idea of the amount of resources that have come from property tax and the increase over the last 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years on that? Because I know counties are increasing their property tax to be able to fund that. Do we have that number?
We don't have it here, but the MnDOT just did that, and so that we could probably get that to the committee.
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I do have the figures done by House Research in my office. I'd be happy to give you a copy.
Thank you.
And Representative Leader, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's basically what I was going to say. The state auditor, if you look at their annual report, that's where we can gather all the numbers, and they have, they're always a year behind, but we'd have, I think 2006 is not quite out, but usually we look at those numbers and you can really see the impact of total expenditures.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, Representative Leader, do you have some comments to make on the overview?
Well, the only comments I have, definitely what the committee is going to look at, we definitely need some funding source. This is the first year that the department, or not only the first year, but it's the first time they've practically run into a negative balance in the last couple of months because they spent their unreserved or their cash flow, and we're actually bonded to the hilt. the way the MnDOT is set up right now, the projects they presume in letting, roughly around $600 million in the metro area, that's the total amount of construction, contract construction projects for the entire state on a normal budget. And you say, well, how can they do that? Well, because metro projects generally run 2 to 3 years, so they don't spend the $600 million 1 year. They might spend $200 or $300 million, so the balance of that can be used for statewide projects. But it would appear that we would need some additional funding. The department will get its regular funding source because of dedicated funds and also the federal funds, but those are declining sources, so we really have to look at additional funding or we're going to be in some real problems. We frankly are not at a preservation level right now. We're actually less than a preservation level, and I think you can recognize that if you drive the streets and highways and also if you're in a congestion area in the metro area. In the other areas, we're concerned about transit. Metro transit and rural transit are basically in a level of cutting back to what they have. There's an increase request in the supplemental budget to take care of it for this till the 1st of July. And that's going to be the big problem. This we talked about here about the breakdown on that 40% of the MBEST monies. And there are bills in all the way from 35.5 to Governor has 38.2. So that's going to be quite an issue because it impacts both of them, the metro and the rural. It's going to be pretty difficult regardless of what answers you come with it. The other big item, which is a sleeper usually to everyone, is deals with the aeronautics. Actually, I believe I'm correct, and I think was the last gasoline tax increase for aeronautics, I think was in, I might be wrong, but I think it was 1947 when it was established. That may be wrong, but I know it's been a long time. The real problem we have is the aeronautics fund is not increasing, and we're seeing increasing use of planes and airport, the needs for airports. One of the problems is that when they're buying new planes, and we had just a meeting with the airport operators and some of the organizations, one of the large companies, two of the large companies in Minnesota had representatives there, and they are buying, you know, high-priced planes, and airports get 6.5% on the sales tax, and on some of the planes that they're buying, that's roughly $500,000, close to $500,000 in sales tax. And there's one company wants to buy two this year, and they can domicile or they can headquarter in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and still save a heck of a lot of money besides their flight, their other taxes that they have. So we haven't really done anything with airports for a long time, and I think it behooves us to take a look at it because we're going to lose a lot of revenue basically on the sales tax and basically on their, what do you call it, their airport, not flight taxes, but some of the other taxes they have. And the other thing, it's a large industry. I think there's 16,000 people indirectly and directly associated with airports, the small ones and the big ones. And that really doesn't deal, we don't deal much with the MAC itself, I mean the larger airport, but we deal with the regional airports in the metro area under the Control of MAC, and the other airports statewide are under our jurisdiction in the committee. So I think those are the big issues that we have to address.
Thank you, Representative Leader. Representative Yarrow?
Yeah, Mr. Madam Chair, Lady. Members, I just could never see why we are using property taxes to fund the street and road improvements and so on. It's the most regressive tax we have. I believe our federal and state per gallon tax is about 32 cents, isn't it, per gallon right now?
State
and federal, about 30? 38. That's not much. last time I checked, the world average per gallon tax is around $3. If we increased federal and state government that tax to about 50 cents, we could take it off the property taxes. Homeowners who are on fixed income and businesses who don't have a bottom line can't probably afford to drive on the streets and roads, and they're subsidizing our roads, and the most regressive tax, we should take it off, put it on the ballot, because we haven't had that. I guess it has to be, it's a constitutional issue. Put it on the ballot, and I think the people would lead the way and vote to replace
that regressive unfair tax.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, thank you, Ms. Ewers. And I think we will hear from Gary Carger on public safety finance. Thank you, Mr. Carger.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Gary Carger, Fiscal Analyst for the Public Safety Committee. And basically what we'll be covering, we'll be giving you some numbers today on also going over the accounts that the Public Safety Division has, for especially for the new members. And also we're going to cover some of the areas that some of the growth in what's driving public safety costs. And we're going to give you some facts on that. It's a little, maybe a little different presentation than you're used to. But the first chart, you can see that public safety makes up about 5.3% of the general fund budget. Public safety mainly has general funds in it. That's a fairly easy spreadsheet to do. And also I should point out that the public safety division, they do take in money. I mean, a lot of it is non-dedicated money, such as fines, surcharges, you know, that the courts levy on individuals. In fact, the fine surcharges, I think that number is somewhere around $1 million that each year that comes in on that. Okay, we will. The next one is just some of the agency or some of the programs that are in public safety. We have the courts, the three courts, Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, and the district courts or the trial courts. We also have the Department of Corrections. They have three programs, institutions, community corrections, and their operation support. Next, we have public safety and the programs there. It's a little variation. We have Homeland Security and Emergency Management. The BCA is in there, Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the Fire Marshal, Gambling, Alcohol Enforcement, the Office of Justice Programs, that makes up a lot of the prevention dollars, the Gang Strike Force is under there, the Financial Crimes Task Force is under this program. We also have then the 911 Emergency Services and the 800 megahertz area. That's also another program under public safety. So we're just going to show you some of the appropriations. This is simply a spreadsheet that we did showing the November forecast spending, the current law spending, and what the governor recommends. And I just want to point out one thing that is, or first of all, the total spending, general fund spending, which the governor's recommendations is around about $1.866 billion for the biennium. I mentioned mainly it's general funds. I just want to mention two that are not general funds that have been growing. One is the state government special revenue fund. This is that 911, you know, and the 800 megahertz system. Right now it's currently funded on 65 cents on your phone bill every month. That's both wireless and your landlines. The governor does have a recommendation to raise that 10 cents a year for 3 years to bring that up to 95 cents. Currently, the base on that is $83 million. If the governor's recommendations were adopted, it would go up to about $106 million. Mainly, that will be be used to complete the 800 megahertz system, you know, throughout Minnesota. The other one is the fire marshal special revenue. That is going to be about $10.3 million. This biennium, this was a change last year that went through the tax committee. It used to be a 0.5% tax. It was raised to a 0.65% tax, and the money will fund the state fire marshal, will be dedicated for the state fire marshal. Next members, I'm going to cover.
Just a minute. Representative Leader, did you have a question now?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Mr. Carger, does the emergency or the ambulance emergency medical providers, does that come out of this one fund? And is it increased or not? Is that hidden kind of in there?
Madam Chair, yeah, Representative Leader, it is in there, and there is no increase right now with that extra 30 cents. That extra 30 cents will be to complete the different phases throughout Minnesota for the 800 megahertz system.
Okay.
Yes. Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carter, for the State Fire Marshal's Office, I have complaints sometimes from people that are on the front end of the enforcement. Is that mainly, are we funding them, but their regulations are federal? The example I had was in one of my nursing homes. The grandkids had sent artwork into the people in the nursing home, and the residents were putting it on their door. So if they colored a picture out of a coloring book for Christmas or for Thanksgiving or whatever, and they would tape that up on the door, and the fire marshal came through and ripped them all down and said, "This is a fire hazard." That doesn't sit well with the residents or the staff or anybody else. Who has jurisdiction over something that what most of us would say is a common sense issue in terms of regulation? I hate to submit a bill saying, you know, little kids can have artwork on the door for a week. Instead of getting into all of that, I mean, Representative Junkie had to do that with the hot dishes because of just the reality of some of these agencies. Who has the regulatory authority to deal with something like that? Is it us or is it really the federal government?
Mr. Carter.
Madam Chair, Representative Seifert. It is, I know it is the state, you know, the fire code that the state has, but also I'm unsure that they also contract with the Department of Health to inspect nursing homes. And I know the Department of Health, they certify nursing homes and they license them, and when they certify them, they are using federal regulations. And I used to inspect nursing homes in my other career, and there was a part of that was the life safety code requirements. But I will double check to find out if
there's. Could you find the answer out on that specific example, Madam Chair? Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Kahn.
Mr. Carter, did you rip down the children's artwork when you were inspecting them?
Mr. Carter.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, no, I did not. In fact, my mother is in a nursing home up in Duluth, and they do have some artwork up. So it could be a difference in the inspectors.
Representative Earhart.
I'm glad, just another comment. I'm glad that when we hired an inspector, we hired a nice one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Suggestion, Representative Seifert, might go as an amendment to Representative Welty's no glass bill.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if you could, Mr. Carter, speak a little bit about this agency's role in the community's right to no exposure to toxic substances.
Madam Chair, Representative Clark. If I remember right, that is under the emergency management area, the right to know. And did you want specific information on it? Or?
I'm just wondering. I mean, I think they might have one person for the whole state, if I'm mistaken.
Right. I believe they have one or two individuals for the state. And that's, I think, where the companies have to notify the state when they have, like, toxic substances. You know, in case, and there's a good reason for that. In case of a fire or something, the firemen would know that they're there, that this could be a hazard.
Representative Clark, another question?
No, I guess, okay. Excuse me, just to, maybe we could talk a little bit more about the details of that together, that'd be good.
Right.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, we're going to go on to some public safety facts here, and I just want to show you what's driving some of the budget in the Department of Corrections. You can see that.
Mr. Carter, I'm sorry, just a minute. Representative Carlson has a question. Chairman?
Listen on that point.
I'm sorry. Okay. Representative Severson, was yours on that point?
Actually, Madam Chair, it was to the 800 megahertz issue. Mm-hmm. I wonder if Mr. Carter could kind of, I know that the total build-out for the 800 megahertz was $185 million, I think was the total cost on that. Is the governor's requisition or proposal here for a phase-in to cover the rest of that monetary figure in out years, or can you give us a little background on that?
Mr. Carter.
Madam Chair, Representative Severson. Yes, it is. It will be. Right now, we're in phase three, and that's the Rochester, and I think part of your area, St. Cloud. There will be this money, if the governor gets his recommendation, will complete phase three funding. Then we'll also go into phase four, five, and six, and that will complete the state of Minnesota then. I think it's in like 90% of the areas. They may have some difficulty, like up in the Boundary Waters, but it will complete the state for the 800 megahertz system.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Carter, I just have a follow up on that as well. And what date did you think the 4 and 5 phases would be finished? Was that mentioned?
Madam Chair, they're looking at it. I think they're part of this money will be going for a plan, and that plan will actually determine what the total cost will be and what the total or when the completion date will be. When the actual completion date. And that will also include when the locals come onto the system.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, we will also, we're having a hearing on this. We met with Public Safety on it, and they are coming up with a timetable. As soon as we get that timetable, we can share it with members of this committee.
Thank you.
Okay, just some public safety facts. These are some of the areas that are driving the public safety budget. You can see that when I first started here in 96, 97, the total budget was, $885 million. Now it's currently $1.723 billion, 95% increase. I just did something for the Committee on Full-Time Equivalents. I only went back to 1999, but they showed that full-time equivalents in public safety, our committee was 5,704. Currently, they're at 8,458, the 48% increase. The main drivers behind this, corrections, and we'll go into that a little later. Also, the state court takeover, where the courts took over the county responsibilities and the county employees. We're going to cover the big item on this is the Department of Corrections. You saw under that one chart that they made up the largest share of the public safety budget. Just to go over some items, that the prison population currently as of 1/1/07 is at 8,900. Just as a side note to this, Texas, and I think I told this committee this last year or 2 years ago, 168,000 people in prison. California, the number two state, over 166,000. Minnesota was third in the overall ranking of the number in prison. We have been growing. The average increase has been since 95, I think, has been 3.1%. Minnesota has been averaging 5.2%. I was telling my wife, I think I said this last time, I'd hate to be the budget director testifying in front of this committee with these numbers for corrections. When you look at a 10% increase would be more than our current population. So let me just go into the number. You have the number of males. It's 8,378. Females, 522. Currently, close to 1,000 of these inmates are housed at Prairie Correctional Facility. This is the private facility in Appleton. They also are renting beds at local jails. They have right now 99 beds. And also, they're short-term offenders. These are the offenders that would spend less than 6 months in prison. We have 337 of those now housed in local jails.
Madam Chair.
Actually, I have a list here. Representative Carlson, do you have a question right now?
Not on the statistics, but maybe in the interest of time. Could you go back to the courts? And I understand there's quite a difference in terms of the governor's recommendation relative to the courts and what the courts have requested. And do you know what that difference is offhand? And if not, you can get it to us later.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, the difference is a little over $36 million for the biennium.
And, Madam Chair,
Representative Carlson,
would any of that break down in terms of one-time versus a continuing appropriation? For example, they are asking about a new panel for the Court of Appeals, and I assume that would mean space. Could some of that be met with one-time appropriations? I know they've got a safety issue for the building for the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals. I assume that entails both equipment and staffing.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, no, there is no really one-time appropriations in there. They all would have tails. In fact, this is a spreadsheet I just did for the committee, and you can see the courts on there, the trial courts, Court of Appeals, and they all have tails. There's no real one-time appropriations there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and then quickly, Representative Seifert has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carger, I see you have the Prairie Correctional Facility with almost 1,000 beds, and I happen to see House File 898 by Representative Hillstrom that would prohibit renewal of the contract with the Prairie Correctional Facility in Appleton, according to this bill. First of all, has there been an analysis of a prisoner in Appleton, how much it costs to house them per year versus a like prisoner in another facility in the state of Minnesota, and how much would the difference be?
Mr. Carter.
Madam Chair, Representative Seifert, no, there really hasn't been. I mean, there's different per diems. I think, you know, Prairie Correctional Facility is somewhere around $57 a day. Department of Corrections, depending on how you look at their per diems, and there was some discussion in the committee on that, their overall per diem can range from $77 to around $99.
So, Madam Chair, what we're saying is that we're saving minimally $20 per prisoner per day by housing 1,000 people out there, minimally. If you're in a public facility, you're 77 to 99.
Madam Chair, Representative Seifert, I don't know if you can really say that because they also have overhead costs in there that they have monitors, and there's transportation issues, and there's also some health care, you know, where if it's extraordinary health care. But it would be an interesting issue to really look at someday.
Okay. And, Madam Chair, real quickly, Mr. Carter, how much room do we have in other facilities? Let's pretend this bill passes. We've got 1,000 prisoners. There's the biggest employer in five counties in western Minnesota. If you take everything if you don't include Wilmer and take everything west of Wilmer, where do these 1,000 people end up going if this bill would happen to pass?
Madam Chair, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Carter.
I would say Representative Hausman's committee would have to get very busy.
Madam Chair, what would a 1,000-bed prison facility cost the state of Minnesota?
I think
we had to reinvent the wheel here instead of using something we already have.
Madam Chair, Representative Seifert, I think from past experience, they're looking at around $100,000 a bed to build.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Carter. And I'm sorry, I know there were a couple of questions, but in the interest of time, we do need to hear from Representative Haymar. Did you want to just give an overview?
Not until he's done.
Okay. Okay. Well, is there much, do you have any further comments, Mr.
Well,
Carter?
You know, we put the last one we're going to cover quickly is the reentry issue. And, you know, this is what's driving, and I'll make this really quick, too, that this is based on some national studies. These studies are quoted in almost every reentry article you will read. And they're showing that after 3 years, people that are released from prison, that 62 to 67% will be rearrested within 3 years. This was also confirmed by a Minnesota, the Legislative Auditor's Report, where they're showing a 64%, you know, rearrest rate. Reconvictions for a new crime, same, around 46 to 45% within 3 years. And resentenced to prison, you know, 25%. The last statistic I'll quote, type of admissions, we heard this was from the Sentencing Guidelines Committee. These are new, people that are going into the prison system today in Minnesota. 1989, the initial commits made up 76%. In 2005, they made up 39%. The rest were probation, revocations, or supervised release returns. Once again, this is what's driving corrections and what's driving the corrections budget.
Well, thank you, Mr. Carter, and I apologize for not seeing the last page. I'm sorry. I thought you had finished your report. But we will hear from Representative Paymar at our next meeting. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.